What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to Tour Life. Today is February 20th, Tuesday, and it's back to Airbnb, Brody and Yuli. How's it going, brother?
It's good, man. The Airbnb life. I don't know if it's going to be easier or harder.
Oh, it's going to be harder.
With our track record, but I'm surprised, man. I got on here about 3 minutes ago, and we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I will say this. I took this photo. I'll send it. Let me send it to Silas and see if he can throw it on there real quick. Because I just was walking around trying to figure out, like, I was like, hey, because I just got done filming a podcast right before this. So I was like, I probably should use the restroom before we start Tour Life. All right, I just texted it to you, Silas. You should have it. And hopefully you can throw it on
this
here.
This picture could be anything after that story.
And so I'm in this Airbnb, and Ezra and Goose have already left. So it's just me. And I'm trying to get my bearings with Silas. You got it? Oh, okay. So I'm trying to get my bearings straight and try to figure out where everything is. And Ezra on the course today was just like, dude, wait until you see this Airbnb. I'm like, what? Like, is it as bad? And I'm, going back to some of the worst Airbnb experiences that we had last year. I'm like, is it as bad as this? As bad as this? He's like, bro, just wait. And I was like, all right. So once the photo comes up, I'll explain it a little bit more. But today we have a few things to talk about. It's probably not going to be the longest show ever because a lot of stuff really just didn't happen. We had the All-Star Week go down. So we'll recap that. We've got some new post-production media plan coming soon for the Disc Golf Pro Tour. We've got the Wild Story of the Week, Edwin Stats, and a few listener questions as well that we will go over. And here's the photo. Silas has it. This is from our bathroom.
Nah.
The toilet is right next to the shower. And there's just someone's bed is just facing it. Are you getting a little echo, Silas, or is that just me? Audio sounds fine. All right. I'll lower it down. Maybe I'm getting a little echo or something. All right. We do have a ad to read, so I'll jump into that right now. 2024 is here in full swing, and that means it's time for a New Year's resolution. Check in with our friends at Manscaped. Newsflash, it's never too late to level up your grooming game and keep yourself tamed. Manscaped's new Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is every man's cheat code to look good, feel good, and turn the page on confidence this year. Whether you're going for a trim or that clean-shaven look, this trimmer has you covered. Trusted by over 10 million men worldwide, now's your time to get a grip on your grooming with our exclusive offer. Go to manscaped.com and use code BANTER for 20% off plus free shipping. Let me introduce you to the MVP of 2024, the Manscaped's fifth generation lawnmower. It's not just a trimmer, it's your grooming sidekick. Equipped with two skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. And did we mention it's waterproof? Because a trim in the shower is the only way to start the day. Let's face it, resolutions might come and go, but a well-groomed you is here to stay. Thanks to Manscaped. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code BANTER, BANTER, at manscaped.com. Embrace a new you and definitely embrace a new trimmer courtesy of Manscaped. All right. Anything exciting happen, Yuli, with you this past week?
Not at all. I mean, weekend off last week, and I didn't do much. I just kind of, I don't know, it was a weird feeling, the week going leading up to the tour. I didn't know if I was supposed to get out there and grind or if I should, soak in the last couple of days of the off season. Had a little anxiety about coming into this week, just because of all the stuff. It's like, you're back. Like, how's that going to be? So a lot of mixed emotions, but we made it. We made it here yesterday. Went into our first Airbnb. It was all smoky, like somebody had smoked in it. We had to bounce out of that one. We got a new one. We got in there today, got our first practice round in, and got my first look at the course ever, because I'd never played here before. So we could go into that in a little bit. But no, man, I mean, it's good to be back on tour, back in the swing of things for sure.
Yeah, I was planning on flying in yesterday, but I guess they, you know, I got word from a couple of the guys that they're thinking about shutting the course down on Monday. So I messaged Jeff Spring and was like, hey, are we going to be a practice on Monday? He's like, let me get back to you. So I found out from, you know, texting some people that the course was not going to be available. So I changed my flight, changed my rental car, because I was like, why am I going to fly down to Florida on Monday to not be able to practice at all? So I got to spend an extra day with Kelsey and the boys, which was nice. It was fun. It was good weather too up in Dallas, which was really cool. We went out and played a couple, filmed a couple videos as well. So that was all good and fun. But yeah, I had a pretty chill week as well, which was nice leaning into the first tournament. You know, we have a bye week too, I guess a bye week or an off week in between this and the next tournament, which is Waco, which will also be nice. But I want to jump into the All-Star weekend, because that is the event that took place this past week here in Brooksville, Florida, where we will play the chess.com Invitational this week. So we got our first look at some of the holes. Now, granted, they did play a different layout, so a lot of the holes are going to be different. But the skills competition, we'll kind of go through some of the winners, any surprises, any upsets. We have accuracy. That was Jessica Weiss winning for FPO, and Chris Dickerson, who ended up taking Eagle spot, winning for MPO. Then we had for distance, we had Eliezra taking it down for FPO and Anthony Barella throwing over 700 feet and winning it for MPO, which was impressive. And then Owen Scoggins and Andrew Marweed both winning the putting competitions. And then at the end of the entire event, we have the Team Missy champions for FPO and Team Isaac champions for MPO. Did you have a chance to watch any of the All-Star event?
I did, actually. On Sunday, I watched most of the finals of both FPO and MPO.
Okay.
So I just kind of sat back on the couch and turned it on, and was on and off from that and the Genesis Open, the PGA Tour event.
To me, it was unwatchable.
I was going to say that. It was tough, man. It was really tough to watch. I mean, it was just everybody struggled. It was horrible conditions. I didn't know where they were going. It was like hard to get a perspective of what was going on, just because it was a new layout every single time that they played. And I think I actually mentioned that to Sarah. I was like, I'm watching it, but this is hard to watch.
Yeah, we'll get more into the actual course, because I want to talk about that during the chess.com Invitational preview. But it was tough to watch for a couple of reasons. One, some of these things are just not really interesting. The accuracy, not very interesting. Putting, not very interesting. I think the only thing skills wise right now that they have that is interesting is the distance contest. I think that's the only thing that I tune into and I'm like, oh, this is cool to see how far people can throw. They probably did overplay the drone a little bit. That noise also is just obnoxious to kind of see it ring every single time. I don't know if there's a way of them to get rid of that noise, but that to me was the highlight of the entire event. And like you kind of talked about, Sunday, there really wasn't much that you could do because the weather was so bad. I mean, a lot of the lenses were fogged up and had, you know, smudges on them. So you really couldn't see that well. Connection was a major issue for a lot of people, which we'll get into here in a second. And because ultimately, as a viewer trying to watch disc golf, it was something that I tuned in for like a minute. And then I was like, I'm out, man. I can't watch this. I can't watch this.
Yeah. I think with the, you know what, I feel like it can be a great event. I really do. And I think if I were to design like the competitions and just have like free reign over anything, I would set it up in like a football stadium type atmosphere, or even a basketball stadium.
Yeah, especially the crowd with, and everyone around close.
Exactly. And, you know, I picture like even the putting challenge and the skills event, and I might be way out of line here and just my own ideas, but I feel like it'd be more entertaining if, like at the basketball all-stars for the skills competition, that's kind of boring as well. It really isn't that fun. People running around and doing whatever. But in our game, I think it could be really cool if the putting adds something like that, to where the, like the skills you have to possess to like do different putts and stuff, maybe go through hoops, and have to really like manufacture ways to like go through multiple areas and make putts. I think that could be really cool to film. Also skills, like if you had like little sections that you like had to make it through, and if it was filmed correct to where it makes it through one, and then you have to go through like a hoop and then land in the circle or something, that could be really cool to watch, just because I think people are good enough to do that, to be able to make their disc go through like 3 to 4 foot windows at like distance. Like they're good enough to do that. And if it was in an enclosed area to where you had to go through like a couple of them and then like hit a net to where you're not throwing at 400 feet, like that's a skill to me, to be able to like throw something 60 feet after you hit like a tiny window, have it go through a hoop that's like on a turnover line and then on a hyzer line, to where like you're hitting multiple sections of this thing, might be able to give better perspective to the viewer of how hard that is. You know what I mean? I think there was a video that Gannon and a few people did it might have been last year or the year before, but there was like a tee pad, right? And there was a plywood like wall to block people from going right.
That was an OTB skins match. Yeah. He threw it through
And Gannon like threw it through there. You know what I mean? And parked it. See, that's what I'm thinking when I think of that stuff, because they do have the skills to be able to do miraculous, tough things that normal people cannot do. Right. And if they could somehow set up a course, a skills course that looks like that, it could be entertaining, especially for the people in there. I feel like that would be the best route, because filming somebody like throwing through two mando trees and into the basket and being in the bullseye wasn't that fun to me.
No, I was thinking other things of like, I like the idea of like shattering glass or hitting a target. So you could do something where you have the competitor's face on something and you're trying to break all their pieces before the other person breaks your pieces. You could do another like gate thing of where you start with something that is 10 feet wide and then everyone throws through it. And then you go to 8 feet wide and then 5 feet wide, and you keep getting like tighter and tighter and tighter. And you see who's like the last one standing. I think that could be interesting. I think the way they have it currently set up, it's not different enough from what we currently see and, you know, normal coverage. And that's why it's boring. The distance thing, we rarely ever see these guys throwing 600 plus feet, very rare. And that's why, to me, that's very exciting. I see Andrew Marweed make putts all the time. I see Chris Dickerson throw great shots through trees all the time. So it wasn't anything like you were saying that, hey, we're going to throw a bunch of different shapes and sizes and distances, and they're each going to be different points, and you have 60 seconds to try to accumulate the most points. That's something that I've never seen. And now all of a sudden I'm paying attention. So I think that was a big one.
Also, like, the things that we can do with the disc are crazy. You know what I mean? Like the distances, the amount of skills these guys have of being able to hit a gap and turn it at a certain point is what's really impressive, right? Be able to manufacture different lines, not just throw the same shot over and over again. As far as the putting too, I think it would be a lot better if people went head to head, two baskets, even two people just going head to head at the same time, two different baskets. Okay, go, bam. You know what I mean? Cause then there's a competition between two people kind of right away. You know what I mean?
There's a cool game that we played too, of where you have two baskets 30 feet apart from one another. And the first person to have, like a certain number of discs in the basket next to you loses. So I'm putting on the basket that's next to you. You're putting on the basket next to me. And I basically only can have one disc in my hand. So as I putt, I'm trying to make it and then grab, if there's a disc in the basket, I can grab a disc out of the basket or grab from whatever, like stuff that's different. We need to see something that's different, right? Time-based, something.
I mean, even, you know, like you go to putting leagues and they have two people, you know, like the horseshoe deal, like having a game like that between like Isaac, his partner, Calvin, his partner, and going at it to first to 21, like that's something that I would for sure watch. You know what I'm saying? And it's learning, but I mean, they did this last year and it wasn't great. The year before it wasn't great. And they didn't,
they improved it a little bit.
The putting course was better.
Yeah,
for sure. The putting course was better.
The skills was better than the one year where they had like a really small piece of string and it's like, go over it, go under it. It's like, we can't even see the string. So it is improving a little bit, but I think, I don't know. I didn't see that much pop around it on social. The only thing that I really saw that people were talking about was AB through 700 feet. That was really, and that's where I was like, that also needs to be the last event. Why are they doing distance first? Like, distance needs to be the grand finale of the day. Have all the other stuff leading into the distance, and then the distance one is the big grand finale.
Well, I think it's because everybody knows that 700 feet is dumb.
So far.
And so, like, the perspective from the viewer is like unbelievable. Right. They're like 700 feet. Like I have perspective of what that is, because I have a 700 foot hole at my home course, or I have a 400 foot hole that I can't even reach. This guy's going double that. Like,
and Ellie Ezra and Ella Hansen both threw over 500 feet. So
which is nuts.
That's also tons of people. I've always said the FPO, the biggest thing they need to lean in on is like the relatability to the average disc golfer. And so the average disc golfer sitting at home, seeing Ellie Ezra throw 500 feet, like that's like, oh my gosh, like they are bombing it, you know? So we'll see what it happens. I mean, we've talked about it. The timing of it too is terrible. I think leading into it and having it be like your practice to leading up to the season is a bad idea. Like, you shouldn't be trying to work out kinks at the All-Star event. Also, like, we haven't seen any of these people for a while. So it would have been much better if we were seeing Calvin when he was at his dominance. We were seeing Isaac after he just won a major, like seeing all these people. Like, we haven't seen these guys play in 4 months, 3 months. So timing's not great.
I think that the teams could be bigger too. I think there could be more on each team and make it like more of a Ryder Cup feel as far as the actual event as well, to where it's just like a lot of match play and then more points being accumulated.
Why are they not doing match play? Why are they doing stroke play? That's the silliest thing.
Like doubles, I get it, but there has to be match play. Like, match play is so fun. It's so fun to watch.
Match play, yes, because it's just the back and forth on every hole. It changes things.
It's quicker too. Yep. Like, all of a sudden you're just picking up shots, you're on to the next thing. And I really think that there should be more players involved. Like, there should be maybe like 10 to 15 on both sides. Mm-hmm. And it's like a main event type thing, to where you bring more people in, because now you have like 30 people making the All-Star event instead of just the small amount. But I get it. It's like, they're doing it. It's awesome. I wish I made it. I would have loved to play in it. It's a great event as far as a feather in your cap, I think. But right now, the way it's being filmed, I just wish it was more entertaining.
Yeah, it's kind of a dud.
I bet you the people who are playing in it, it's a great time and it's tough. You know, it's fun. I've played in it before, so I can say it is fun. Yeah, I was happy to be there.
But Yuli, we're also talking about people that like live in a car. You know, and the standards are definitely different, right? I mean, they're playing disc golf. They're getting paid to play it. I don't think any of them would probably tell you that it was above and beyond like other events.
No, but once Chris gets the invitation to go and take Eagle spot, he's there. it means sure. something.
It's still that's great honor. Yeah. yeah, it's still great honor. Yeah, that's and stuff. All I'm saying. Yeah. I just think like the bar is so low right now versus what it could be to where now it's like, holy cow, like that was so fun. That was way different than what I normally do in disc golf. That was really, really cool. Go ahead.
No, the last thought that I have on it, like the ideas that we're talking about having in a gym or blah, 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 like that's going to take a lot of money. And I think that's a long ways away. I don't think it's realistic. I just, that's where my mind straight goes to of being like, oh, this could be sick. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I don't think any of our tournaments are to that level yet, period, of the level that I think it could be at. You know what I mean?
The other thing was, I saw Isaac and Gannon today and, you know, I congratulated him on winning and I asked him like, would you guys win? And they're like, I don't know. So I don't think they won anything. I think you did win a little bit of cash if you won in one of the individual skills challenges. I think it was like $250 or something like that. So you won a little cash for that. But winning the entire event, you didn't really have anything. And I think when you're playing in these exhibition matches and there's no stakes, they're really like, if you win or lose, nothing but pride. That's the only thing you're really playing for. And really you're just playing, you know, unless you're a captain where you hand selected your team, you're just playing with a bunch of people that you might not even have a connection with. So to me, I think if you're not going to do the Manufacturers Cup, if you're not going to have like an actual tournament or think, I think this would be a great time to like test that.
Yeah.
Have Discraft, Innova, Dynamic Disc, MVP, have all these manufacturers send their top four or five players, whatever it is, have everyone compete, and then have each manufacturer throw $10,000 into a pool, and now you've got a $100,000 pool, and the winning team takes it all. So like now the winning team is each going to go home with $15,000. I guarantee you, what we saw at the All-Star event this year versus if that was what was next year, it would be a completely different thing.
Another thing is we didn't really get to see the full potential of the actual matches because it was just the weather did not cooperate.
The weather was bad, but we've seen last year, the year before, like people don't take it seriously. And why would you? It's an exhibition. It's leading into the season. You know, like people are going to kind of do their own thing. So it's just trying to figure out a way to like get people amped up a little bit. And I think that would be a good one because there's a lot of people that have, you know, a lot of pride for their sponsor. And then also cash is the greatest. I mean, there's a reason why these people are traveling around in their vans playing A-tier events and stuff. A lot of it's not because they just want to play disc golf. It's because they need to win money. So granted, the All-Stars are probably going to be the people that don't need the money as much, but $15,000 to anyone is a lot of money.
Yep.
So that is a thought. All right. Another thing I want to jump into here. I got stuck, and I wasn't the only one, because I tweeted this out. Silas, if you can throw the tweet up. I wasn't the only one. I was stuck on this landing page to try to sign into my Disc Golf Network account for like 5 minutes. I couldn't figure out what to do. So for our audio listeners, it's the agreements page. And there is like, there's nothing on this page. It just says, I agree to Disc Golf terms of use, read terms of use. I agree to Disc Golf Network privacy policy, read privacy policy, and then a bunch of other stuff and read more. And like those are hyperlinked. So I was like, okay, maybe I have to like read each one and like go through it and then something will pop up for me to click on. But I was stuck on this thing being like, what the heck am I doing? And people were like, bro, I was stuck on this as well. You just have to click. So what you had to do, Yuli, is the line that says, I agree to disc golf terms of use. You just had to click over in that space, that empty space over there.
Oh, really?
And then it would check it. And so you had to do it for both of those. There's no box. There's nothing that says click here to agree. There's nothing on there. So that was already like, if you're going to have a new product and you're going to charge people, the interface and like how easy it is to use is really important, right? And yeah. this is the first thing that I witnessed with the new product and whatnot. And it's just like, I already have like a bad taste in my mouth. And I wasn't the only one that struggled with this. And unfortunately, it didn't get much better because you had a lot of issues with the coverage for a lot of different people. I guess with this new platform that they're using, like people's Rokus weren't working. People, obviously the Xbox, we already heard that got taken off. Fire Sticks. There was a lot of people that wanted to like be able to stream it to other places, like have it on their phone and then AirPlay it or stream it on their TVs. They were struggling with that. I also noticed that you can no longer like multitask. So on YouTube, if I'm watching a YouTube video, I can like minimize the video so it's still playing on my screen, and I can like text message while it's playing. So I can still watch it and multitask. This you can't do anymore. You can't in their program. Like once you kind of like try to swipe to minimize it, it just goes away. So I don't know. That caused some complications for some people. And what else was there? There was music in the background of one of the skills events. So I think they got DMCA'd on YouTube and YouTube took it down, the video. So people were trying to go back and watch it. The videos didn't exist anymore because of the copyright music in the background. That was an issue. And then I just wanted to kind of get a gauge from others. Cause like I said, I tuned in, I watched a little bit of the distance contest. I watched a little bit of the accuracy, some of the putting, and then maybe a couple holes here and there on Sunday. But for the most part, I just didn't watch that much. So I wanted to get a gauge of like people that tuned in and watched. And so I asked on Twitter, how was the disc golf coverage on the Disc Golf Network this weekend? And here were some of the responses. So I'm just going to read these off. How this was not free on YouTube says it all. Another person said heavy rain always makes it a slog. Between the sound of those raindrops and the ugly weather, it was difficult to pay attention. I had to turn off my surround sound and turn down the TV to be able to somewhat enjoy it. I don't want to watch people standing around. Get some color commentators that know how to milk a story. Watch Sports Disc Golf Network commentators color, not just a shot dissection. I can do that. So that was a little bit on the commentary. It felt like it was underwhelming just last year, but with added options like rewind, watch from the beginning, etc. Exposed microphones getting blasted by raindrops was very annoying. I thought the same. Rain was unfortunate and made the golf bad. Wooded courses are fun to play, but to watch was hard, not knowing what's a good shot versus a bad shot. That's kind of what you were talking about, Yuli, is you brand new course, you've never played before and you're watching it. Very hard to tell what the story is. Like, is he going to be upset?
This course is nuts, dude. It's crazy. You didn't practice today?
We'll,
or did you?
We'll jump it. No, I did. We'll jump into the course here in a second, because I do want to talk about the chess.com invitational here in a second. Someone said one of my Fire Stick devices doesn't support the new Disc Golf Network app and the fog lenses wasn't exciting. Publishing a required update without notification that affected multicam coverage on Saturday wasn't the best idea. The FPS and lack of lagging was nice, but something that bugged me was not having what the stroke person was currently attempting. So they didn't have graphics, I guess. And ultimately, this is what I'm going to say. With anything, if you watch any sort of coverage of any sport, you're always going to have people that have negative things to say, no matter how good it is. The issue that the Disc Golf Network is going to have this year is they changed a whole bunch of stuff, and now they're charging for a lot of stuff as well. When you start charging for stuff and people are paying for a product, they're going to be a lot more critical. So that is going to be kind of my big worry, is the product going to live up to the standards that people are used to? Because when it's live on YouTube and it's foggy or it's laggy or whatever, yeah, people get upset, but it's free. You're watching it free on YouTube. But if you're paying $5 a month or $15 a month or $25 a month and you're not getting a good product, that's where I think some people are going to be really upset.
Well, it's just tough to learn something new. especially like for me to learn like new interfaces, new things, and not have it in the place that you're like so used to having, if it's Fire Stick or if it's your Xbox, and then having to go through different things, man, that's annoying. It really is. Mm-hmm. Tough.
Yeah. So obviously you're not really expecting, you know, from this past, I think the weather also hurt them a lot there too, but we'll see. Hopefully they get some stuff ironed out and, you know, hopefully coverage is better today or this week. Before we go into the chess.com invitational, I do want to quickly talk about the post-production media plan. And obviously, Yuli, you're a big part of this. So if I miss anything or if you have other additional information, definitely chime in. But this is going to be the 2024 post-production media plan. It is still going to be free on YouTube. So am I worried that it might not be free on YouTube at some point if they still... Or is that just him saying, hey, like, it's still free, don't worry about it, we're charging for all this other stuff? Or is that maybe a worry in the future it might not be free?
I think one of the things is, because of all the changes with the network, I think we might see an up in the viewership on the YouTube. I really do.
Yeah, the people might be leaving live, and YouTube might be a lot higher. So next day coverage will be free on YouTube for all Disc Golf Pro Tour events. That includes the Disc Golf Pro Tour Plus and also the Disc Golf Pro Tour Playoffs. Now, when we go to majors, the ones that will be free next day coverage will be the U.S. Women's Disc Golf Championship, the PDGA Champions Cup, and the PDGA Pro Worlds. For European Open and the USDGC, as well as the TPWDGC, those will only be available next day for the Disc Golf Pro members. And those will also be available 2 weeks later on Disc Golf Standard and on YouTube. So if you want to see those events in a timely manner, that is, I believe it is the highest tier. So you're either going to watch those live, those two majors live, or you have to pay for the pro to watch them the next day on YouTube.
Okay.
And I was also heard kind of through the grapevine that this is not a Disc Golf Network or a Disc Golf Pro Tour. This is a European Open and a US, like USDGC. Like, this is what we want to do. And it makes sense, because I believe those events are going to be behind the paywall themselves. I think those are pay-per-view events. So I don't think they want to... You have to pay money to watch the event on Thursday, but then people can watch everything that went down on Thursday for free on Friday. I think they want to keep everything behind a paywall. So that does make sense to me. I'm sure there are going to be some people upset with that. Okay. The other big thing is there's going to be a different focus, and they're going to be switching from just covering lead card. And they started doing this a little bit in years past, of where they would do like these check-ins and they would use like gatekeeper footage. And you guys would be like, oh, look, James Conrad is shooting an incredible round on chase card. Right. And you would do these like check-ins that were on lead card. But now, because so many people have won that aren't on lead card, and so you're watching this event and you're just like, I just watched 45 minutes and I didn't even see the winner play. Jomez is now going to be focusing more on the entire story, which I think is going to be awesome. And were you guys kind of prepped by this at all, Yuli, as like what this, do you have any information on like what this will entail for Jomez coverage?
No, I'm getting together with the crew probably tomorrow to go over some stuff, a meeting and some filming. So I'll probably find more out of that, of what's going on tomorrow.
Okay. But I like it. I like the idea now that it's going to be a lot like the live coverage, but it's going to be obviously a much more condensed version, but you're going to see the good shots from other players, not just on lead card, which I think is going to be really good, because right now the idea of like you just boosting four players every round and that's it, I don't think that's super helpful for disc golf. I think the more names you can get out there, the more people get excited. I think that's a good thing. So I'm very excited. I think that's one of the best news pieces of news that we've gotten this offseason, actually. Other things you can expect: Gatekeeper Media, there will be doing MPO second card, and also GK Pro will be doing skins at certain events. And then Ace Run Pro, which I think did some of FPO coverage, will not be on tour anymore, but I think they will still be involved with some coverage. I think they're also doing, it sounds like they're doing a lot more editing, which makes sense. So these companies that were traveling and touring with their camera equipment and going out and filming and then editing in them, I don't think that makes that much sense moving forward. And I think this is going to be better for everyone, of where they don't have to travel, and the Disc Golf Pro Tour, the Disc Golf Network, will send them coverage and they'll chop it up and edit it from their homes or studios or whatever, and do it that way without having to be on tour. So I think you're still going to get just as much coverage. It's just going to be a lot easier and cost efficient for a lot of these companies. So I think that's a win-win.
I don't think people realize how much work goes into like post-productions. It's insane. Like, it's just editors editing constantly through the whole entire day, well into the night, and sometimes into like 6 a.m. in the morning. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Do you know, I know you said you're going to talk to Jomez about this, but do you know if they're going to drop people from Jomez coverage? So let's say someone on Lee Card after 8 holes is just way out of it. Are we still going to see every single one of their shots, or are they going to drop them from coverage and maybe just show their highlights from, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't have any of that information that hasn't been relayed to us, the commentators.
That's something that I would like to see. I mean, if someone's having a bad day on Lee Card, I don't need to continue to see them throughout the entire round on Jomez, just struggling. Like, just, you can literally just drop them.
I know. I've had a couple of rounds on Jomez where I was just like, damn, I wish that you would just not show that.
Yeah, just
there's no reason for people to see me bogey every hole while, you know, these other guys are just shredding.
And that's what I was saying. Maybe that will happen, because it would be a lot more awkward if you're showing every person's shot, right? And then all of a sudden, now you're just showing 3 people's shots. But if you're showing everyone's shots in the tournament all over the place, not seeing everyone's shot on Lee Card, I think that makes sense. Because there also are some shots where it's like, it's tough to watch the same, some holes, let's say the drives are really boring, right? There are some holes that we play where the drive is really boring. I don't need to see 4 minutes straight of back to back to back to back drives on that same hole.
I don't know how it's going to work. I know in the past that we've done chase card check-ins, and I think if I were to guess, it'll be more like that. It would be more of us covering the people that we're covering and then getting the highlights of other people who are in the mix. I'm guessing.
All right.
That would make more sense to me. If not, I mean, I'm with you. I would like to see us just do a condensed version of what's going on, like the whole story of, okay, now we have this person making a push, let's roll over to hole 16 where we see this for a little bit, go back to hole 2 with somebody in the mix. I would like that.
I don't need to see someone that's 6 shots back, you know, throw a shot into circle 2 on hole 16. I don't need to see that. So,
well, somebody dropping from like 4th place to 12th place isn't a great story. A great story is somebody from 38th getting up into that spot and passing that person. That somebody's playing good and making a move. I feel like that's a better story. But
I agree. And I think that's the other thing that I'm really excited to see, if this is something that you guys will do at Jomez, is are you going to be able to start telling stories about someone making the cut on the cut line? Are you going to be able to start telling stories about this person has this putt to qualify for the next tour event, or this person has this putt to get into the Disc Golf Pro Tour? You know, are you going to be able to show those type of stories? Because like you said, it's not all just who's winning the tournament and not. These other stories are ones that people can, is Kayla Visca going to continue his cash streak, right? And being able to watch him play the final hole to see if he can birdie it to keep... Those are all stories I think you can get people excited to tell. All right, let's move on to the chess.com Invitational goes down this week. I heard going into it, I heard that the course from what it was, you know, previously Throw Down the Mountain. Now it is, the course is called Olympus. I've heard from people that have played it saying that they did not think it was ready for a tour championship, for a tour course. It wasn't on that level. And they must have put a lot of work into it because I didn't get that vibe at all. I thought it fit in really well with a lot of the courses that we play on tour. I thought the tee pads were really well done. It's a pretty well manicured course. Also, with how much rain they had and the fact that they didn't let us practice on Monday, I was going into today thinking like this is going to be a mud pit and it's going to be terrible. There were some spots that weren't great, but overall it was pretty well kept. They did a great job of putting down wood chips, hay, doing all that. And, you know, from a design standpoint, it's a really fun course to play. It's there's not too many holes out there that I think like this is just kind of a filler hole. There's a lot of really good holes. My one kind of question to you, Yuli, on it, I don't think this is going to film well, regardless of rain or not. A lot of blind shots to where we're throwing and you can't really see the disc finishing. So that's going to be difficult for the person that's producing to time it up perfectly with the catch cam. So that way you don't get all of a sudden, like, cause sometimes with catch cam, you can kind of get completely like, where the heck am I looking? What just happened? So you're going to see a lot of shots go out of frame or behind trees, and then catch cam's going to have to pick it up. So that's going to be challenging. And then the second thing too, that I think is going to be very challenging, is where the spectator is going to be. Those are like my two things, and the cell service out there is really bad. So I'm worried a little bit about service. But I would say those are my three things. Other than that, I think it's a really well-designed course. I think Paul McBeth did a great job designing the course and getting it up to par.
No, I agree. Well-manicured. First time I've been on the property, I've watched coverage on this place before. And that's one thing that I'll say to the viewer is, it's harder than it looks on coverage. It's harder. Like, the shots are tougher, low ceilings. A lot of the par threes are just these low ceiling straight shots. A lot of the par four are blind. So it's a lot of placement shots, a lot of ground. A lot of like shot shaping where your disc has to land nice and soft. Otherwise you're going out of bounds. Distances, you have to be pretty dang precise with your tee shots. You can't land short on a lot of them. You can't land left on a lot of them. You can't land right. You have to land within, like, I would say 70 foot landing zones, which is pretty tough when throwing down and uphill. It is a course where I feel like you need multiple practice rounds because it's like so specific with where you have to throw it. A lot of blind shots. My first time through, like, took 4.5 hours.
Oh, really? Wow. Oh, did you play solo?
No, I played in a, my first round was a practice round from Jomez. So we were just lost. We didn't know where the,
anyone that knew what they were doing though.
None.
Okay. Yeah. I played with Ezra and he played the course. So we were able to kind of zoom through it a little bit, but I want to go back to what you said, cause I agree with you. There's a lot of holes where there are landing zones of where it's like, hey, this is where your disc needs to end up on these par fours. When you look at the score, score sheets, it's not score sheet. What am I talking about? What is it called? A scorecard. My gosh. Thank you, Silas. Jeez Louise. It's been a long day. I woke up like at 6 o'clock this morning. When you look at the scorecard and just look at the pars and the distance, you're going to be like, oh my God, this course, these guys are going to shred this, because there's a lot of par fours that are 600 feet, 585 feet. But what you just said, the landing zones are very specific and there isn't a big, like, throw this shot. There's a lot of like, well, I could throw this, or I could throw this, or I could do. And I love that because it gets you thinking of like, what is the correct play? A lot of these holes is not, this is the shot, this is the only way to throw it, and who can execute it better? There's a lot of holes that you can throw a backhand, a forehand, a roller. You can throw a lot of different shots off these holes, and you have to decide what is best for that day.
Yeah. I mean, just starting off on hole one is a tough little get, straight up the hill, low ceiling, tough little tunnel shot. And that's pretty much the shot that you need for the whole course. If you don't have that shot, low ceiling, left to right, righty backhand, you're going to struggle out there, because I feel like 420 is the landing zone on a lot of holes. Like 420 on the dot, don't leave it left or right if you can do that, which is the hardest shot to throw in the game, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be really interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing what the fans think. You know, it's a brand new course, brand new tournament, first tournament of the year. So I know everyone's going to be very excited to watch. And, you know, I'm hoping the Disc Golf Network, I'm hoping everything goes well. They get all the kinks worked out and everyone has a great viewing experience and we can continue. Cause I want to start in Florida more. Like I want more events in Florida, man. The weather down here is so nice.
Except for them last week. And the last thing I'll say about the course though, if you do throw a bad shot, you're taking a bogey. They did a really good job of if you throw a bad shot, there's not a lot of great scrambling that you can do. You're like, you're blocked off, tough to get into the circle from wherever you are. There's lots of OB that's guarding, and you can't just hammer something down there and hope it works out, because there's cliffs right by the basket. There's kicks that you can take to where you're way off the fairway, and it just par is not an option. A lot of people are going to have to lay up for bogey. I think one of the biggest issues I think we might find is that Friday, it looks like it's going to be windy and possibly rainy. If that's the case, long rounds. Very, very, very long rounds. These are going to be long rounds. They're going to be 4.5, 5 hours, I think, with a lot of backups. There's going to be a lot of backups because there are short par fours. And so a 530-foot par four, you're going to have to wait till they're pretty much on the green to throw. And so if somebody throws a bad shot, doesn't hit the fairway, they're right off the tee, they throw another bad shot, like, it's going to cause backups. There's also branches. They really do a good job of making sure that you're going low. You hit a branch, it's 80 feet off the tee, kicks left. That's going to happen a bunch. It's not just like that's a mistake that is going to be made. It's not going to be a left or right pull. It's going to be sneaky branch, hit your disc, you're down a cliff.
And I think too, I agree with you. We're not going to see some of the, you know, Ida Wild, Northwood Black, Champions Cup, some of these wooded courses that we play where you get off the fairway and guys are just taking forehand rollers and just throwing it as far as they can and just seeing what happens. I agree with you. That's not going to happen all that often out here just because of how good some of these greens are with the slopes and the OB around them. And it's going to be interesting, I think. I think it'll be fun. We'll see. I think you can definitely see some double digits out there if the conditions are good. I think there's enough good people on tour that someone can get hot and shoot 10 under, 11 under. But I think with how difficult the course is and with how demanding some of these holes are, I think we could see more separation from round to round with players. I don't think we're going to see someone shoot 7 under, 9 under, 8 under.
I think that's probably what it's going to take to win. A bunch of 7, 8s, and 9s. But I also think that 2 under is not a bad score out there, man. I think there's going to be a lot of people between even to 4 under. There's going to be just a packed ton of people. I think 5 under is going to be like that great. If you shoot 5 under, 4 to 5 under, like that's a great round. If you can do 3 of those, that's a top 10 finish, I think. I think 5 under every round is a top 10 finish.
Yeah, you're probably not off, but I like it because if you play well out there, you're going to shoot really well, and if you're playing bad, you're going to shoot really bad. And sometimes we play courses where that line of playing good and playing bad, like you shoot 3 shots different. And out here it could be 10 shots, which can hurt you in a hurry.
because there are a lot of holes that if you just play it like soft shot down the middle, soft shot to the corner, soft shot up there, par's not bad.
No, on a lot I'm of doing that holes. On a lot of holes. Yeah.
Like you can just take par. I mean, birdies are great, but if you figure out a great game plan for this place, like it, there's a lot of golf to be had on this. It's not going to be like a birdie fest.
I'm trying not to stress out this week. You know, I'm just going to come in, try to take a lot of pars, grab a couple birdies when I can.
That'd be great. But it could just go off the rails quick. I mean, hole one, you just hit the branch, you go left, you throw it up there. You miss your putt, you roll down the hill, you hit the basket, you roll, all of a sudden you're taking a seven and you're like,
I could be taking a lot of big numbers. I could be taking a lot of big numbers this week. All right. Before we get into the wild story of the week, we are trying to figure out, I don't think we have everything figured out right now. So I think we'll probably start Waco will be the first event, but we're going to try to figure out a way to do a little battle. So it'll be me, Yuli, and Silas from Tour Life versus Connor, Hunter, and Trevor from Grip Locked. Instead of me and Yuli going back and forth with our picks, it's going to be Tour Life picks versus Grip Lock picks. We haven't come up with like what we're playing for or anything like that, but we'll pace basically as a unit decide who we think is going to be like
grand. Like that's the number you came out with. The All-Star.
There you go. There you go. We'll come up with like our top three or top five. How are we going to do it for the event? Grip Locked will come up with theirs for the event, and then we'll have a point system and we'll keep track of that all throughout the year. And that's what we'll do. Okay. We'll see who does better, Tour Life or Grip Locked, throughout the season. So be on the lookout for that. And let's jump into the wild story of the week. This is always picked out by our intern, David. David, the intern, if you want to send in your wild story of the week or wild story that you have, it doesn't necessarily have to happen this week. You can email wildstorytour@gmail.com. So this is sent in from Preston. I took my buddy Dave out for his fourth round of disc golf ever today. I set him up with baseline discs and a virtually unthrowable R-Pro Beast. I was going to take him to Pier Park here in Portland, a pretty technical track, but it was super windy, so I landed on the much more approachable Levy Rich. Don't know how to say that. I apologize. Levy Rich. As the round went on, he was getting the feel for the angles with the beast and was racking up the pars. We get to hole 9B, which is about 120 feet, but super guarded with several large firs that will smack you right into the frigid waters of Burnt Bridge Creek. Our other buddy says he's not even going to risk it, but Dave runs up and says, "This is how you do it." He proceeds to wind up and launch the beast towards the wall of trees. It stands up just enough to catch an air bounce and dumps right in the back of the cage. It was definitely one of those surreal moments that makes you question your sanity, but in a good way. I know lots of people hearing this would have been playing for years with no aces. We'll be seeing them with jealousy that someone bagged it on their first 72 holes. But I think we all need to take a lesson from Dave and just play free, have fun, and play some shorter holes. Best of luck of the season to you guys, Preston. Hey, that's a good little thing at the end. I say that all the time. To get better at disc golf, one of the best ways of doing that is playing short holes, playing holes that you put yourself and give yourself a lot of birdie chances so you can feel what it feels like to be a lot under par, but also you're just putting the pressure on yourself of having to throw good shot after good shot after good shot and building. So I like that. Playing free, having fun, see where it takes you. It's a good little life lesson there.
I like it.
All right, we're going to jump into
it.
Yeah, that's... With an unthrowable R Pro Beast is what it was with. All right, we're gonna jump into some Edwin stats here. This is going to be
2023 FPO course overview versus MPO. So we're going to do a little comparison between the two. So in 2023, also shout out to Edwin Stats. Always let's show some love in the chat for Edwin Stats. And I'm sure all of our audio listeners love Edwin Stats as well. If you're interested, come over to YouTube to check out the stats if you want the visual, but I'll do my best of telling you guys. So in 2023, FPO courses skewed more towards par fives than the MPO course, 69% more. Overall, FPO holes are 16% shorter than MPO holes, with the largest difference in par fives, they're 19% shorter. Birdie rates for par threes are only 18%. So if you look at percentage of holes by par, you can see pretty much pretty similar for par threes and par fours. But for par fives, we only have 8% of our holes are par fives, while the FPO division has 13%. So quite a big increase there as well. Some other things to look at. The average distance, I think this is a little messed up, Yuli. The average distance in par threes for MPO is 368. The average distance in par threes for FPO is 325. I think that's a little too high.
For
FPO. I think the average should be a little bit lower. I think 325 average for par three is a little high.
Yeah, I mean, 325, it seems like, I don't know, it might feel right to me.
But like
because if you think about our par threes, like
our average is 368.
Yeah, but I feel like that's the average.
That is the average.
But
I mean, yeah.
we have like big ones.
Yeah, which I think skews. We also have really short ones too.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I what I'm saying is like I think the average. So obviously, they can definitely have 370, 380 foot par four threes, but I think the majority of their holes should be closer to like 300 feet. I think right now, and they're doing a better job of this because in the past when they were playing the MPOTs, it gave such an advantage to the long throwers. And that's why you saw so many long throwers just dominating the FPO. I think 300 is like kind of the sweet spot right now. And as the FPO division develops and more players come in, I think you can start boosting it up. But that's something to look at. I just think that's a little bit, to me, 325, that tells me that there's going to be a lot of 375, almost 400 foot par threes, because they do have like 250 par threes. And so for the
average, do you think ours should go down or up? Or do you think that we hit the sweet spot?
I think 370 is actually like a decent number for us. I just think the 370 average should be, we have too many outliers on both ends. We have too many holes that are crazy short and we have too many holes that are way too long. Like, I don't think we should ever really have 500 plus par threes.
Anyway.
Unless it's a downhill shot. Like there's some par threes on this course out here that are pretty long, but they're downhill. And so they don't play 500. I don't think we should be playing 500 foot par threes.
I like the idea of having like a short islandy hole, one short islandy hole, a couple straight 350s, right? Like dead straight, maybe woods left, right, a couple, or maybe like one or two, four plus, and then a longer, like 470, like a long, you know, like a tough get par three. I don't like them all being like 450, 470. I think there's a place for it. I love playing long par threes. It's great. We need them. But I feel like a lot of the holes, some of them are just a bit too far.
We almost need, we almost need like a formula of like, this is the kind of ideal course. And then you try to get it, obviously with the land that you have, you try to get it as close to that as possible.
How many par threes do you think a course should have?
I think it should be like five.
Yeah, we're in the same boat. I think 5 to 6 is like a pretty good number.
Yeah.
I think four par fives.
I think we can do with like three par fives.
And the rest par fours. Yeah. I think we're in the same boat. But I would love to see every course have that touchy 250 classic, you know, kind of dead right in front of you. Pick your poison, but you have to land it soft on a green.
Especially I think that's if you like have that like later in the round too. I love that. Where you really just have to, you know, you got all the adrenaline, everything's pumped up. You've been playing a full round and now you all of a sudden have to step up and execute a very technical kind of
a lot of shot. Traditional golf courses have that to where it's like, there's usually a wedge to a nine iron par three.
Mm-hmm.
Right around there.
And I think a lot of pros, that is a part of their game that they struggle with, is they're fine. Mm-hmm. If they can throw full shots, no problem. It's when they step up and they can't throw a full shot. They can't throw something super hard that's overstable that's going to get to the ground, right? They have to throw something 60%, 70%. I think that's where a lot of guys struggle. And I agree with you. I think that whole
thing exists. It's becoming a shot of the past because of all the overstable putters and stuff. Even if you have a short shot, it's not the classic putter shot. Like I'm going to throw a zone flex sidearm probably on that shot, right? You bring somebody like Ken Climo, Barry Schultz from the past, you know what they're throwing? They're throwing a nice little touchy AVR or rock, yeah, like right
nose
out there.
Up and just kind of,
yeah, mm-hmm. I don't have that shot. You know what I mean? Like we got rid of that shot as the courses and the discs changed.
Yeah, exactly. All right. We got birdie rates differ. We're moving on. Birdie rates differ most between technical and wooded holes on par threes and par fours. For MPO, it was par fours and fives, and the difference is most pronounced on shorter holes with a 50% birdie rate difference. So if we're looking at FPO birdie rate here from 2023, we can see that the technical side, there was a 17% birdie rate and a 22% on the open, where MPO was 31% and 37%. And then if you go on and look at the birdie rates by par, when we're talking about technical and open, you can see like on par threes, it's almost identical. 17% for technical, 19% for open, which is kind of crazy to me. You would think the birdie rate would be so much higher for open, but then there is a massive gap between par fours and par on par fours, and then identical, both 23% birdie rate for technical and open on par fives, which I thought was also kind of interesting. Wow. As well. If we go down, this is a 2023 driving and putting analysis for the top 36 FPO players. No surprise here. We see Kristen Tatar at the highest of pretty much everything except for putting. I think Owen is the only one that's higher than Kristen at putting. And this is basically just showing that her driving and putting is just far superior to pretty much everyone else. The people that are really good driving, really poor putters, no surprise here. You have Evelina Solonen and Henna Blomroos, who are both extremely great off the tee. And we all know they really, really struggle putting-wise. You have someone like a Sayananda, who's pretty much just overall just good. She's not incredibly better than the average, but she's pretty much like the average for everyone. And then someone that's, you know, a great putter that is struggling maybe a little bit off the tee is Alexis Manahondo, who ended up actually winning the putting contest last year, which I don't think she was there at the All-Star event this year. I did not see her. So that's always a cool graph to kind of see where players end up.
Did you see Owen though at the All-Star putting?
I mean, she is also an incredible putter. Yeah.
No, it was ridiculous.
She has the highest putting for everyone here.
I think they put a clip together of her performance on the Instagram for the DGPT. Go watch it. It's nuts.
If Owen had an extra 50 feet and also didn't have to rely on throwing everything on flex lines, she could be like... Yeah, that's the thing she's missing. She's missing.
I think she's
going
to play great at this course.
Oh, I think so too. Yeah. And that's the thing is her game, Kristen Tatar, she can go wherever. She's a Calvin Heimberg. It doesn't matter the course. She can compete wherever.
Own is very more specialized. Now, granted, her skills are still very good, and that's why she can compete at pretty much every course. But as the FPO field gets deeper and deeper and more players come, you know, have a better skill set, she's going to kind of fall off on some of these courses because she only throws flex shots and she doesn't throw extremely far. So that's kind of a big issue with her.
I don't see that really. I think she's going to be good for a long time as long as she doesn't get injured because she's such a good putter. She's such a good putter that's going to keep her in on all these courses because the FPO field in general struggles at putting.
What I'm saying is like if more Haley Kings, Evelinas, Ella Hansons, if the field is more filled with those type of players, then she would fall down the leaderboard more than she does. That's what I was kind of saying. Just because her skill set, I agree. Her putting is incredible and putting travels. No matter what course you play, you always have to putt. It's just some of these courses we see, it's like she just can't physically birdie some of these holes. Yeah. So she's going into a course and she's like, I can only birdie 12. And she's having to play against people that can birdie all 18. And that's just an uphill battle. So she is nasty though. She is nasty. All right. Player accuracy by technical versus open holes. So no surprise here. Top players for technical holes. You have Evelina Solonen, number one, 40% green in regulation. That is insane for technical holes. And then if you go over to open holes, she is fifth at 44.5%. So regardless of the hole, she's pretty much out of 10 shots, she's giving herself a birdie look in four out of those 10, which is nuts. Technical short holes, she's also very good, 44.2%. Technical long holes, she's also very good, 28.1%. So Evelina, I've always said this, if she can figure out how to putt, she, to me, is the one person that can really press Kristen Zatar because she's the best off the tee. And her putting, though, is just so poor that it just brings her down. So some other key numbers to look at here. There were four players in the top five for C1 green regulation for both technical and open holes. That was Tatar, Solonen, Hansen, and Hanley. The largest difference in ranking between open and technical was Katrina Allen. She dropped 11 spots from open to technical. The number one, there was one player in the top five for C1 and green regulations for all type of holes, and that was Holland Hanley. So Holland Hanley, also someone that's very good off the tee. Kristen Tarr, number of C1 green and regulation categories, Kristen Tarr leads, and she is number one overall in C1 and green regulations at 41.8%. So overall-wise, 41.8%, depending on the hole, very impressive. The largest difference, here you go, Yuli, largest difference in ranking between open short holes and open long holes. Own Scoggins. She was number 11 for open short. She drops all the way down to number 29 for open long holes. And that just goes to the distance, right? Of where some of these holes that are 400 feet, she just physically cannot throw into circle one. So I don't know. Maybe she can start getting some sneaky distance. I don't know. Maybe she did something this offseason and got some sneaky distance, but that's just always going to be kind of a limitation for you if you're going into holes knowing that you can't birdie them. So shout out to our boy Edwin Stats, always bringing us the best stats every week. If you enjoy Edwin Stats, you can go to foundationdisc.com, pick up some Edwin Stats merch for your boy. Let's jump into some listener questions here and we'll wrap the show up. Zach wants to know, I wanted to know if Edwin posts those stats and graphics anywhere. I am a data science teacher in high school and would love to use these as examples, discussion topics. I love to hear it. Talking disc golf in schools. Our intern, David, who runs our social media, or he runs our Twitter, he normally posts the graphics to Edwin's stats the day after the pod. So follow us over on Twitter at tourlife_pod, and you can get them off of that. Mitch says, have you guys heard of the Wildflower Tour? I have not. It's a series of all women's events in Texas. I think it's doing a ton of good to get women involved and grow the sport. I would love to hear y'all interview the women who started it all, sponsored by Mint Disc in Austin, Texas. Chrissy Fountain, Stephanie Vincent, Des Redding, and Renee Farr. I think it would be awesome if this caught all over the U.S. and ties into last week's, I think, episode talking about growing the sport, especially for women. So these are things that I could totally see popping up more, Yuli, is these small little tours. And this one sounds like it's more Texas-based and more women's-based. I like it. I think this is good. If you're able to kind of, you know, I think this is probably going to be more of a passion project. I don't know if there's really money. I mean, we've talked about tournament directors a lot. I don't really know that many tournament directors that are just like cashing in on checks. So it really has to be kind of a passion project. But if we can have more of these tours pop up and make it easy for people to come out and play in events and get some experience, I think this is a great thing.
Especially just statewide.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's huge to be able to be like, oh, I'm going to do this tour all year. I list the 8 places. I can do those 8 places and I'm going to go play all the events. I think that's a great idea. One of the things when I first started was we had the Arizona Cactus Series, and that was a big thing in Arizona because if you got top, I think 6 in the Cactus Series at the end, you got to take the 6 players to a match play event at Marley Field in San Diego. Awesome. and play against all the other people who qualified to get a team to go there. So it was like it was a big deal. You know, I played all the Cactus Series just to try to win that thing. So it is doable. You have other places that have run tours for a long time. I mean, Southern Nationals was a huge thing when I first started.
Yep.
And it's dwindled down a little bit, but it's still going on in the Southern states. So different tours, like you said, huge. There's always room for it.
Yeah, there's a place for everything, right? All right. Do you think the Disc Golf Pro Tour putting on an advertisement at local area courses to market the Disc Golf Network when the Pro Tour comes to town could be a good hands-on approach to spreading word to local disc golfers and getting them interested in watching? Yeah, I mean, I think any sort of advertisement they can do leading up to trying to get the groups and clubs and all that stuff to come out, all that good stuff, I think. Cody Speck wants to know, Yuli, what is the one thing you do playing disc golf that you usually do not coach people to do? Also, what is something you see top pros do that you don't coach people to do?
Well, I think one of the things is obvious. It's situational play, right? You get into certain situations, and I've been playing long enough to where I can kind of calculate bad decisions, good decisions, and sometimes I have to go for the bad decision based on my play that day. Right. So there's like an example of this is the right shot. I'm not throwing the right shot very good today. I have this other shot that's more risky, but that's the shot that I'm throwing good and I'm confident in. I would never teach somebody to do that. But because my skill set and knowing my own game and knowing the way that I play tournaments and I've done it for so long, I'm able to make that decision and feel good about myself. And that's something I would never coach somebody in doing. It'd be like me being on the bag with you and you go, hey, I'm comfortable with this shot. And I'm going, the obvious shot is over here. I can't pull you off that shot because I don't know how you're feeling in that moment, right? Because you're a top professional. So that's something I get that question a lot. And I think that's like the main thing. Experience. I was talking to somebody about this actually recently. Experience is the number one thing you can't teach. Like you have to go and just do it and feel it. One of the things is, I was talking to my friend Ryan about a C tier that I played. And I said, well, I'm so good at winning these smaller tournaments because I know what the person's going to do before they even do it. So I can push when I want to push and I don't have to when I don't have to. I know what that person's probably going to do before they do it. Right. That situational play that I've gone through over 500 of playing tournaments that somebody else would never be able to kind of figure out. And so I'm able to know like, okay, it's time for me to throw this shot. It's time for me to do this. I can weigh up. I need to go for this putt. This is an important moment. Something that you don't get that experience unless you live it.
Yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. All right. Tour Life crew. Love you guys. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show.
as always, it's always fun to, you know, see the comments that Silas throws up. If you're interested in becoming a member of Tour Life Crew, check that out in the link description over on our YouTube. Silas, do we have a Tour Life merch update here?
We do. So,
oh boy, here we go.
Do you want to, which one do you want first? Do you want Grip Locked?
Give us Grip Locked. Yeah, always Grip Locked first.
All right, Grip Locked we got at 172.
Ooh, closing in on 200. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Tour Life, we've got 190.
Wow. We're closing in on 200. Wow.
Yeah. We're pulling away, kind
of. In a way. Holy smokes. All right. Well, go check out tons of really cool stuff for Tour Life over on foundationdisc.com. Just go to the Tour Life collection. You can see all the new products over there. We have Edwin Stats stuff on there. We have Yuli Horse stuff on there. We have Tour Life merch on there. Silas, we need to get something on you for you on there. Got to get some Silas merch on there for the people.
Oh yeah, let us know what we should make with that.
Yeah, anything else you guys want to see on there, let us know. Spotify and Apple Podcast listeners, thank you guys so much for listening. Spotify, we're up to 973 reviews. Apple, we're up to 261 reviews. So we appreciate everyone that listens over on Apple and Spotify and all you guys that join us here live. Quick episode, but you know, we're leading into the start of the season. I'm sure next week is going to be a big one. Very exciting to kind of see. I think there's going to be a lot of storylines coming out of this tournament and going into the Texas swing. Did we miss anything? You guys got anything else for the people?
We didn't miss anything. I still have that sale going on Discraft, though. I have pretty much all my discs on sale. A lot of them are under $15. So go over there and get those. They're going pretty quick. We still have some stuff on the website, discounted prices. So faster I get rid of all those stuff, the faster I can get some newly designed discs and apparel.
Very nice. All right. Well, very cool. Silas, thank you. Yuli, thank you as always, guys. Good show. And we'll see you guys all next week. Have a good one.